up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
Traumedy Podcast 3. You study them hard, hoping to pass. I'm hoping to pass this one off as legit. And you know what? Not too hard to do because I have Megan Corey on this. This is the second half of our interview, which was first broadcast last week. If you missed that first segment, go back and take a listen. Again, we have Megan Corey on here, who is the coordinator of the paramedic program at San Francisco City College. And we're discussing what it takes to become a paramedic, what got her into the job, what got her into not just being a medic, but also becoming the teacher for the City College and the coordinator. And what you should expect, both academically, lifestyle-wise, and what is going to make you the best medic when you're working in the field. It's not just book learning, kids. It's all about what's on the heart and mind of you every day you go out and do it. Thanks, family, friends, loved ones, paramedics, nurses, doctors, loved ones of paramedics, nurses, doctors, nurses, neighbors of nurses and doctors and paramedics, strangers that pass nurses, doctors, medics, caregivers, first aid agents, park rangers, first responders, police, flying overhead, paramedic doctors and everybody else in the sky even. I gotta say, honestly, thanks for listening up, everybody. I hope you're having a good time and enjoying this. I'm having a ball doing it. And I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to listen up. And hopefully you're getting a lot out of this. Again, we're going to keep talking and talking and giving you as much information as possible. And hopefully, hey, maybe a smile, maybe a little snicker, maybe a tear. I'm not hoping for anything other than just some pure entertainment and some positive energy. All right. So without any further ado, my favorite teacher and yours, Megan Corey. I think we're talking about Steve Takamoto. Besides, well, he never said this, but I with his partner, you know, because Steve was just, he would get there at 4:30 in the morning, work out until 7.
I could see that.
And then do a shift and then work out from 5 until 6 again.
Wow.
And he was hard. He was great. He was very zen.
Oh, very.
I mean, you know, all from America, but his partner that was there, he's like, look, dude, I know that you might be really in. Really nervous to be with this guy. And I wasn't because my mom was his teacher.
Yeah.
You knew him, thought he was great. And then, you know, I'm hearing all these stories about how he was.
Isn't that funny? You find that as you get a little older in the field, you'll hear about people in a totally different way than you knew them.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, people are all saying he's really rough around the edges. And, you know, when you work in the field with him and he's so amazingly polite and kind and professional with every patient,
mm-hmm.
whether they're homeless and on the ground or whether they're obnoxious and in your face or whether they're an older person, just so appropriate to everybody.
Right.
So when people would say that, I was like, really? That's no, Steve Takamoto.
Takamoto?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think maybe just people get off the wrong on the wrong foot with somebody and then or
well,
just
he
people
also
are
promoted,
people, you know?
So maybe you had to kind of, you know, you get newer people. I find that I've gotten a lot more kind of straightforward with some people than I ever used to be. And that some people I think need it a little bit more, that clear direction. And they like it. They come back later and say, oh, I'm really glad you really pushed me in that area.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So,
and he would do that. He'd just say, look, okay, so you fucked that one up royally.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Let's, exactly. So what did you do wrong? You want to start? And I'd be like, well, I didn't do it. And then he goes, yeah, that's it. That's about it. All I had. Okay, so we'll be going on another one. Oh, there it is. Which is nice to be in a busy system when you're on your internship because it's like, not too much time to think about that anymore.
Exactly. No, chance I can just, to redeem myself.
Yeah, here
right
I go. I'm ready to go. Yeah. And but his partner would just walk up to me and I'd be just beating myself. I think that's the other part of it too, is if you know you've done something wrong and you're beating yourself up, he doesn't have to say anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
And he'd walk up to me and be like, you know, Steve, the first time I met him, he said to me, in order to treat patients, one must have a patience. He just walked off, and I'd lose it. I'm like, all right, everything feels much better. And of course, he doesn't. He's from Hawaii, I think, initially.
And has a total radio voice too.
He does. Doesn't I got to get him on here. Actually.
Oh, you definitely have to. Takamoto. He has a complete radio voice.
He does. Steve Takamoto.
Yeah.
Coming at you live.
Yes.
But he, in my internship with him, I think a lot of it was the common sense stuff.
Yeah.
And I think you pushed it too. You always said a good paramedic is a really good EMT.
Oh, yeah.
And that's so true because we're rarely doing anything with advanced life support or skills that save anybody that an EMT can't do.
Yeah.
A couple of drugs in a couple of situations.
Yeah.
But he'd say, you walk into the room, patients in the corner between the bed and the wall, pull them out.
Yeah.
Put them in the middle of the room.
Basic stuff.
Turn the light on, turn off the TV.
Yeah.
That three things makes everything so much easier and more accessible.
It just sets
and calm.
The stage. Yeah.
And it's stuff like that, the common sense stuff that people don't think about until they're working and finally go, why is the TV on? Can you turn that off, please?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
I always say now, too, that advanced or being a paramedic is not about advanced treatment. It's about advanced assessment. So it's about, you know, you're putting together your BLS assessment and you add things in that now you've learned, home meds and risk factors and backgrounds and things that you catch in the first few minutes. And as one of the future topics you should go through is from novice to expert, you know, the difference, paramedic novice to paramedic expert. When we talk about this in the preceptor class, we try and make sure preceptors understand the hardest thing about being a preceptor is remembering what it was to be a novice.
I remember because
you can't throw common sense at them yet. They're not there. They got to use the tools that they're given, even if it looks silly. They have to use them because if they can't fly by the seat of their pants, they'll be lazy. They'll miss something, you know, or look lazy and they'll miss something.
Right.
Or they'll just try to do it by, you know, too much common sense without using the tools that they've been given.
Right. The skills that they've learned, the paramedic skills. So, and that's an interesting point. So what do you... As a preceptor, what are you looking for your student to be able to do? Is it just to see retention of, like maybe just that they're actually learning from what you're telling them and they're retaining it and adapting?
This is such a great question. This is another one that this is sort of the big black hole of information out there is preceptor out there by themselves. And we recently, when we had that class, I said to them, we're going to do an exercise. First question I'm going to ask you is, What do you expect at baseline? Your student comes in. What do you expect them at baseline? They must know this coming into their internship. We just brainstormed a bunch of things and came up with some common ones. Mm-hmm. The BLS assessment. You got to know how to do a BLS assessment. You got to know how to do your BLS skills. A lot of it was people come in weak on their EMT skills.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the baseline ALS knowledge protocols, things like that. Things that they could quiz you on. What they don't expect is they don't expect people to be able to put it into context.
Mm-hmm.
So a chest pain patient will be a chest pain patient will be a chest pain patient. They won't be able to differentiate. Every chest pain will be Mona. That's it.
Right.
And you're there to guide them through how to differentiate through the differential diagnosis. That differential is huge. And we have a couple of tools to help with that.
Right.
So that's really hard to get, and it takes time beyond an internship to do,
right?
To get that differential down where you can apply all those things, risk factors and home meds and complaints and where we are and, you know, just like you were saying.
And even, blood pressures and putting it together.
Yep.
Mona, by the way, morphine, oxygen, nitro, aspirin.
Yep.
For anybody who's got cardiac chest pain. But what else could go wrong in a chest? It could be musculoskeletal. It could be... pleuritic chest pain, you know, anything. So, but these students are just going chest pain, algorithm.
Exactly. Or symptomatic bradycardia. That's another one. Slow heart rate.
Slow heart rate. What is it?
Unstable.
Looking at a monitor.
Right to something. Yeah. And
means
ignore the fact that they're in, you know, a Tenderloin hotel room and there's a bunch of needles around.
Right.
And their pupils are pinpoint and they're breathing it to a minute.
Right.
Okay, that symptomatic bradycardia doesn't belong in ACLS right now.
Or it's a 20-year-old track runner who's standing there just going, a little dizzy and his pulse is down at like 40.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Context. They don't get the context and the preceptor's there to help them with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably it. When you have to sum up an internship, they help them with context, but they got to come with content. They have
content,
to come with the content knowledge.
That's a great way to put it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they come with content, but they have to be able to... And you're watching to see if they're now differentiating their diagnosis and their treatment as they go through the internship.
And you help them with, you know, how to pull in all of those things. Because they should come in with basic knowledge of home meds, basic, you know, ability to approach a patient, do a BLS assessment, of course.
Of course, because that's what they come in having to have known before as an EMT.
Exactly.
Right.
And they have to be able to rattle off certain things that are just bread and butter, ACLS, yeah. All the, you know, all their protocols and home meds. That stuff is easy to study, so.
And home meds, huh?
Yeah, and home meds, we just started some of that a couple of years ago because I got so many complaints from the field.
Yeah.
You know, they're not good on their home meds. And then I talked to students about it, and I said, I just hate lists. I hate lists of home meds. So we try a few games at first,
that's
you know,
fun,
where
yeah.
we play a few home med
Jeopardy.
Games and stuff like that. And then I just put them in the sim lab. We have tons of old meds in the sim lab that we just put them out and have them test on them as they run the simulation.
You can do Family Feud with different medications. You get your L's,
yeah.
your M's,
yeah,
different
exactly.
families.
Yeah, there you go. Different categories.
We asked 100 people, what's the top number LOL drug?
Yeah.
10 LOL? Yeah.
So
that makes, yeah, I'm trying to think of other things that were, I think the only thing I really had an issue with on my internship, I got 6 codes on mine.
Wow.
Which was great. Because
yeah.
by the 6th code, it was like,
yeah, as long
and
as you
I
don't get them
see.
All like the first week of
no,
your internship.
I got one the first week and I actually yeah. got a resuscitation and the guy actually made it,
oh,
lived,
that's
walked
awesome.
Out completely okay.
Yeah.
The pharmacology, I think, just knowing yeah. not just, well, I give this drug. Well, what is that kind of drug?
Yes.
What is this?
And why?
And why,
you giving, why are you giving
yeah.
it?
What is it doing mm-hmm. physically on the body? What's physiologically on the
yeah.
body? And I remember just having to go back and study that over
all
and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Because it's important. I mean, it is important to know that. I think it's important
yeah, it
to
is.
Use your brain in that way for
definitely.
A while at least so that you kind of get it and then it kind of goes away
mm-hmm.
and you still know you're doing your medications for what reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you kind of go, wait a minute, what is that drug again? And then how does that work?
Yeah.
You know, which I think the best thing about teaching is that you bring all that stuff back.
Definitely.
You're able to retain all that
yeah.
again, or you have to reassess, or you got to go through it and figure
teaching
it out.
Teaching it is so much, yeah, it draws on different parts of your brain too,
mm-hmm.
because you have to remember what it was like when you first learned it. Because the other thing that happens though too is it's not so much that you've forgotten it necessarily, but you have naturalized it once you've worked out there, you know, for several years. You start naturalizing things like, I'll have students come in and say, you know, I work with somebody and he walks into a room and goes, oh, CHF. Like, we haven't even touched the patient yet, and you identified exactly what was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just naturalizing the ability to pull all that information in, look at home meds, look at the patient, look at their position, and know, okay, that's what it is. Or seen the patient before or
right.
whatever.
It's so. Being able to take the unconscious or the subconscious and
yeah.
being able to describe it to a patient.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, to your
student.
Preceptor or student. Or
yeah.
To the
well,
intern.
That's the other thing, too, is
it's
teaching,
like, is
though,
saying.
Is
yeah.
a totally different skill set.
So just tell me about teaching.
So you can't just
yeah.
be an expert in your field and automatically be an expert at teaching. Just like you're not an automatic leader
mm-hmm.
just because you've had 30 years of experience doesn't mean you're going to make
True.
A great chief.
That's right.
If you have 30 years of experience as a medic, it doesn't automatically mean it'll translate into teaching. So in teaching, you've got to know that you've first of all, you have to know that you have naturalized it and that your student hasn't, that they're way back at novice and that you have to be able to go, okay, this is what it was like. The next thing is you've got to be able to not just show them that you can walk in and go, that's CHF, but now you've got to break it down for the student. And you got to break down, okay, why did I know that? Tell me the elements. Let's go through risk factors. Let's go through home meds. You have to break everything down. And the other thing is, as a preceptor, you have to force them into that verbalizing. They've got to verbalize mm-hmm. everything from on the way to the call, this is what I'm thinking about. When I go in, these are the safety issues I'm thinking about. When I go up to the, you know, when they go upstairs, they've got to verbalize AVPU and ABCs, you know, the mental status and ABCs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They've got to verbalize that all because they can't, that's a scaffold for mm-hmm. them. And if
right.
you pull that apart, that whole building will come tumbling
yeah.
down. So
well, if they don't know what it's built of,
yeah.
they're not going to be aware of when they're not safe, what
exactly.
they're not missing or what they're missing.
And that's hard for a preceptor because it looks ridiculous to them by the
yeah.
time you've done it for so many years. It looks ridiculous to watch somebody you know,
mm-hmm.
list everything out.
You are literally listening to this kid talk about what they're worried about, what they're thinking about,
yeah.
how they're going to treat it if it's this. And you realize, okay, they do know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Or maybe they overlook this. Did you think about this? Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, see. So, and then two, it's awkward to do it. Mm-hmm. As an intern, you don't want to talk. You don't want to treat things on scene.
Yeah.
For me, I wanted to get back inside the ambulance and wear my comfort zone. It's like, exactly. Well, let's just package them and get out of. Because there's a whole fire crew watching you.
Exactly.
There's a whole ambulance company. And there's a family watching you.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a patient who's listening to you verbalize.
Mm-hmm.
Going, why are you talking to him this way? Okay, so
you're
I'm going to take out the vena, the cath, and now I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going into the 15 degree, and you know, and they're going. Do you know what you're doing, son?
Yeah,
you know, but just that whole getting over that I'm embarrassed thing, and just going, okay. So we're walking in, Steve. Just want to show you. I see this, this, and this,
mm-hmm.
and this is what I'm thinking about. Okay, good. When you start talking like that, now you get over that whole self. Conscious mode of talking to your preceptor, of talking to the crew, saying, hey, would you mind getting this patient on oxygen? I want him on, you know, non-rebreather.
Exactly.
We need him on CPAP right now. Do you know how to set that up? I'll help you with that. It breaks the ice a little bit too.
Definitely.
And it gets you thinking that way.
And you really should get in the habit of doing that as an intern, because one of the other things I've seen break down, because every so often a preceptor will call me and say, I need you to ride along. Just come and ride along and see what you think, because the feedback that they're giving the student is you need to organize your assessment. That's a common thing.
Right.
Organize your assessment. Well, then I'll go out and I'll watch a student and they're organizing their assessment.
Mm-hmm.
That's not actually the issue. What they're not doing is verbalizing the worst case scenario.
Uh-huh.
So en route to the hospital, this is very much the truth on a stable patient.
Mm-hmm.
So you have somebody who maybe had a syncopal episode. Maybe they're young and they've, you know, had a syncopal episode and they're fine. They passed out and everybody's, you know, they're feeling fine, but they're going to go to the hospital. Maybe their heart rate's a little fast. So en route to the hospital, one of the common mistakes intern will make is they'll say, okay, so the patient's stable, so we'll go code 2 to the hospital then.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll repeat the vitals and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
What they really want to say is, okay, you know, the patient's stable, their vital signs are good. I'm going to repeat my vitals every few minutes, but I do want to be on the lookout because on the off chance that, because they did say they came from on a flight from Hong Kong, you know, for a pulmonary embolism, maybe, you know, I'll listen to the lungs, I'll keep reassessing, and maybe I'll put it, you want it to be a work in progress, always a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
So you never just settle with, all right, I'm going to sit back and we're going to transport.
Right.
As an intern, that's like a warning sign for a preceptor.
Yeah.
It's always a work. So.
And I think giving more information to your preceptor is always better.
Definitely.
I think it's maybe just the confidence that I don't want to say the wrong thing right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is PE. What should I do?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then it's got to be appropriate too. It can't be like off in the left field.
Right.
Too.
Right. You don't want to put your foot in your mouth too, and
be
like, "Why are you thinking pulmonary embolism?"
Hantavirus.
Yeah. Right. Right. So yeah, but that's just being able to do that. Just saying, look, it could be pulmonary embolism. I'm going to do a 12 lead just in case on this patient.
Exactly.
You know, because I'm thinking maybe this. And
mm-hmm.
they go, okay, sure. But it's like, good. I'm offering this.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a proctor or as a preceptor yourself, you just want to make your job easier. You just want to check off marks and be like, oh, see, they know what they're talking about.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Builds the confidence up in you.
Those are great
push
teachable
forward.
Calls, too. There's calls that are great teaching calls. And something like that, a post-syncope, a post-dicta,
mm-hmm,
where the patient's completely stable.
Yeah.
That's a great teaching call because there's all kinds of differentials.
Or just altered mental status.
Oh,
not
definitely.
Drunk, nothing obvious.
Yeah.
You know, no blood sugar, no...
Great teaching calls.
Yeah.
And stable enough in the ABCs where you don't have to take over for them if they're not, you know,
performing
well or or it's so critical that they've got to focus on just a single skill or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are great teaching calls.
Three qualities you think a paramedic, an ideal paramedic, has.
That's great. That's a great thing. Empathy would be up there. I think that's for any kind of healthcare person. Empathy is always comes to mind first.
What, being able to
emote
with the patient or understand the patient's emotional state?
Yes,
or being able
and
to
especially,
intuit?
Yeah, and empathy with the patient, with being able to say, you know, although I have this in my background, or I've never seen people, you know, of this walk of life or whatever, I can at least place myself that they've called for help. Maybe I don't agree with the emergency, or and in San Francisco, we're talking about the homeless population.
Of course,
right. Be able to kind of empathize that this person came from somewhere and they didn't just, you know, decide, I think I'm going to land on the street one day.
Right.
You know, as my mom says, everybody has a mother.
Yeah.
So, so they come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I always picture the little school pictures of somebody. Oh, they're like 6 years old. Everybody's got a six-year-old school picture somewhere.
Yeah, his little half tooth missing.
Yeah, exactly.
Catholic
exactly.
school uniform.
So empathy would be one. Ability to work in a team setting, both as a team member and a leader. That's actually, teamwork is huge in this field. And then troubleshooting. Troubleshooting, I think, is huge. You got to be able to work fast. But I think troubleshooting and teamwork kind of go with that. You've got to be able to prioritize and things like that. And I think that goes with the teamwork.
So you try one treatment. It doesn't work. What's the next one on the line?
Yeah. Okay, and why is it that,
why isn't that working?
Yeah, because we know that patients don't follow protocols.
Right.
You know, and there's no protocol for some calls. There was no protocol for the tiger mauling at the zoo.
Right.
So, you know, you can't practice every scenario. So you got to know how to troubleshoot, rethink that, and then work as a team. Team is huge. It's huge. You can, you know, you got to be able to work with a lot of different people in a lot of different settings. And you got to be satisfied with your role on that team. You can't always be the one in charge. You're not always going to be the one in the back.
Right.
So it's evolving.
I think also as a team member, you have to kind of be the leader of whatever task you are responsible for, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. That's good. What about, go ahead.
Do you guys work in San Jose on the kind of pit crew model where you do have roles, you know, where
pretty much.
Like on a recess, if you get a resuscitation, you have somebody who's like sort of the
you know how it works is well it's medic for the leader, first arriving medic for the leader on any recess, and then the guys on the engine, whatever piece of equipment they pick up, that's what they're doing.
That's theirs,
the whole time.
Yeah.
And like I have an amazing crew; these guys are fantastic.
That's great.
The engineer on my rig on the engine. Actually, both of them. I'm on the squad now. And my engineer was a medic for 9 years in Oakland and San Jose. And then as an engineer. And then the engineer on the engine, one of them was the first in the first class of the San Jose medic program.
Oh, wow.
So the guy's just, I mean, he is a thinking, he's a mentat. You ever read Dune?
Yes.
He's a thinking machine. And like
that's a book to pull up over the holidays. I haven't read that in a long
book, right?
time.
Great takes book. A little while. Mm-hmm. The appendix is fantastic, but the guy just knows things back and forth. He still teaches at NCTI and everything. So if you have any doubt, they know what they're doing with all the equipment. They know what to. And I grab the ALS bag. That's mine. It's a box. We still carry a Pelican box.
Oh, the Pelican box.
We should have the Plano box. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I just set that up. They'll put the monitor on. I just work. Boom, boom, boom. And I got that. And they take care of that specific thing. And of course, captain's doing scene control.
Yeah.
Any good captain.
Yeah. And scene control is huge. That's the other thing. I catch students in the sim lab, and afterwards someone will say, well, a lot of people standing around, and I'll say, well, put them to work. And they'll say, well, you know, I already had somebody on the IV, and I already had somebody on the airway, and then somebody on the drugs. And I'm like, okay, how about opening the doors, moving all the crap out of the way?
Right.
How about being with the family members? How about, you give them all these roles that they don't even think of. They're thinking ALS. And you're like, no, it's as important to go down to the ambulance and spike a couple IVs or prep your morphine or open the doors.
Yep.
You know, how about opening the doors and getting all the National Geographic magazines out of your way before you go down there?
National Geographic? So, what medics do you
know?
Yeah. Well, what families are you doing?
Yeah.
That's
day shift, I guess. Night shift would be hustler.
Hustlers and jugs and all the great ones. It's like the name for Mother Jugs and Speed.
Yeah,
those are all the bags. Those are all the shit they're moving out of the way.
Exactly.
The Mother, Jugs, Magazine, and Speed. Get it out of the way. You got to get Speed. Can you please put that away, please, sir?
Only home meds to the hospital.
Right?
That's not a home med.
That's not, it is kind of a home med, but you do it everywhere else. Let's be honest. It's not.
Yeah, exactly. Not just home med.
And then as a teacher, what do you think are the three most important things to be able to do?
Oh, that's a good one. I'd still say working a team is up there, because you can't get through paramedic school. You can, I guess, as a lone wolf. You got it, you help yourself out if you work in groups. That's why I group them up as early as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you do too with the teams. I think that's really important. And actually you do the team assignments, which I've never really done. And I should try that and see how it works. Because I usually let groups sort of shift if there's a little politics within a group, you know, or a little...
Right.
Maybe the dynamic isn't as strong. The ability to work in a group and collaborate is really important. And then you just have to have really good study skills, which wax and wane with paramedic students. They got competing life interests and things like that. Mm-hmm. But they got to be able to move and prioritize their paramedic studies as much as possible, in particular the closer they get to the internship, because preceptors want it to be like the first priority for that period of time. So you have to know that you're going to have to move everything out of the way. So I'd say prioritizing good study habits and strong teamwork, strong sense of team. So
sure.
Yep.
Just some things that I learned, because I do definitely love teaching.
Yeah.
What
do you think about that? You teach, you've taught EMT for a long time. What do you think are some good habits coming in? Or
for students?
Yeah.
Prioritizing, making this, well, for us it's a little easier because it's one semester long, and I just tell them, look, if you're not interested in this, you're not going to prioritize, which means you're not going to pass the class.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not going to give it your full bore. I think put in, do as much as you can, always. Yeah. You're only going to get as much out of it as you put into it. So if they have the time, I would say dedication, organization.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And everything. Just being on top of the studying, making a routine for it. And the reason why I set them up in teams like that is because it may be the first time a lot of them have ever had a career.
And
it's not just a college class. It's a preparatory occupational class.
That's right.
And so the sooner you start treating it like a job, showing up on time, cleanly shaven, wearing appropriate clothing. You know, I'm not even using uniforms here. But
yeah, same here. And we go back and forth on that. I still go back and forth on that mentally, that maybe I should start doing that during SimLab semester, that they should start wearing their basic uniform. I think during SimLab they should probably do it. Helps identify people. It's, you know, so yeah, that's a great point though. It really is. It's hireability is another thing. I always say to people, you know, you may do well in class, but are you hireable?
That's another point. It's like, even if this isn't your first job, there's a reason why you're taking this class.
Yeah.
So maybe this is your opportunity to learn the step. It's paramilitary.
Yeah.
And you can make it as strict as you want. But if you make it somewhat regimented and disciplined, then you're going to succeed in this. It's not that you just pass the class. You have to still go in for an interview.
You have
to still impress the people that you're talking to. And if you're organized, you're clearly spoken, you are competent in the skills they show you, your chances are better.
Yep. And I think that's something, too, that's been done well here. And I think between Mary and you and our program, we've been able to show that you can be paramilitary, or you can have that push to be organized and be part of a team and do things like show up on time and, you know,
just
do your work and everything.
Yeah.
And still show that you can teach with a caring, you know, attitude toward your students, and that you can care about their success. And they know that. So I think this idea that it's one or the other is just wrong. You can do both very easily.
And I think that's kind of what I was getting at too, is being an instructor here, or, you know, what are the attributes you think are best in being a teacher, being an instructor? And when I finished college, I went to Santa Barbara, UCSB, came back here, and I took this class, and it was like a completely different learning experience.
Yeah.
Actually, I took my EMT with you spring semester of my senior year of high school.
Oh my God, I don't remember that.
Yeah, you were my first EMT teacher, and then I went to college, and then came back, and then became a paramedic, and went through your class. And just the different way I say it like this, you teach in such a way that the students want to succeed because they want you to be proud of them.
That's so cool.
It's the greatest. It is the coolest.
It's cool. It's a cool thing to say.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, you pull it off so well that everybody goes, oh my God, I think Megan thinks I'm an idiot. What am I doing wrong? You know, let's go study. I got to study. No, we're not drinking tonight. We're not going to the bars. Well, let's go to the bar, but we're really going to study at the bar. And, you know. And it's just this, the way you came to the class, it was very unassuming. It was not, I am the teacher, I'm the instructor, and whatever I say goes.
Yeah.
It's not like other programs I've heard of where they go in and they say, look, 15 of you are going to be gone by the end of the semester. You're going to figure out between yourselves who's going to get filtered out.
That's not how it is in the field. That's what's so interesting.
Right.
That's not
I think a lot of it may have to do with their success rates and their statistics.
Oh, yeah.
The success that they're looking at trying to show how successful their program is. But I remember once the first time you said, boy, somebody asked you a question and you went, oh, boy, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then we went to break and you came back and went, okay, so, and you wrote it up on the board, the answer to it.
Oh, that's funny.
Holy, this is, you. That's what an instructor can do? Go, I don't know that. I'll get back to you with that.
Yeah. And you went and researched it. I love when students bring up great questions like that. Yeah. It's like, ooh, that's a great one. Let's go find out.
And that's what you did. And I went, that's a good teacher, is somebody who says, I don't know, but I'm going to find out for you.
Yeah.
You know, your input is as good as mine. I know more than you right now.
Yeah.
But...
in some areas,
I'm willing. Yeah,
and I think that's important. It's important to know that you're a teacher. That you're always. It's always a work in progress as a teacher. You're never done. It's never like, okay, I've been here this long, and now I know how to do this.
Right.
All you learn is the bullshit administrative stuff.
Sure.
That part you get used to and say, okay, now I know how to add people.
Uh-huh.
Now I know how to submit my grades.
It's your faculty algorithms that you figure out.
Yeah, exactly. That stuff I can figure out. But the other stuff, it's just like the fields where
it's just like
no,
in the field.
No call is the same.
That's right. Every patient you go, so it was kind of layered.
New. Yeah. And the classes contribute because I remember one student gave me the idea, instead of each of us doing our own presentation based upon what we want. And I said, yeah, I wanted to change that. It's like, why don't we do it just like we do on an internship? Give us like give us our weak point. You know our weak point by a certain point in the fall. Come up and say you're going to do a presentation next week and give us 1 week. So I started doing that last year.
Yeah, how'd they?
And I started doing it 2 years ago. And that worked great. I kept it up.
Yeah.
I kept up doing that. Well, now this year, I got some feedback that said, you know, because the drug thing still haunts me, that they're so weak on pharmacology sometimes when they hit the clinicals. Somebody said, instead of doing that, why don't you just give us a drug?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of programs do that.
Drug
or
weak
or
something.
Give a person a drug. But and real specific stuff about the background. So I thought, maybe I'll try that next year. So we'll see.
It's always a new... Yeah, and that's I think also that's a huge part of being a teacher is being able to fluctuate, trying new things...
And that's what drew me to that doctorate program that I'm in, that educational leadership one, which is how can we, you know, keep teaching, keep learning about teaching, you know, and how can we make it so it makes the person the best they can be at the end.
I can't believe we're just getting to this right now. So what are you trying to do with the doctorate thing?
Yeah, it's an EdD program, educational leadership, and I'm basically just trying to continue to develop the program, you know, and learn more about get an input from the other larger view of education, you know, how it's funded and how K-12 does it. And because I don't see much of a difference, to be honest with you, you know, teaching principles and how we learn and things like that. I don't think it's very different throughout our lives. We just have more input and more experience to come in with when we come into paramedic school than we did in, you know, seventh grade.
True. So. Right. More life experience. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, I think it's amazing that the students, when they come to the next paramedic program, they have a person going through getting a PhD. They're going to have a doctor in education as their teacher.
Yeah, that's great.
And obviously with all the other past stuff that you bring to the table, it's fantastic.
It's fun.
It's great.
It's a lot of fun.
So
we're constantly building.
We're always moving forward. Oh, man. I can grow a mustache, Megan, so
what
I can twist
it.
The
Simon Bar Sinister. I will be the biggest man in the world.
Beautiful. So if you want to take the San Francisco City College paramedic program, what are the steps to get in real quick?
EMT. Yep. EMT is the biggest one. And then while you're an EMT, you make the most out of EMT.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go out and get experience, you make the most out of that experience because people aren't going to lead you through it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make the
most
out of it.
It's as much as you put in.
Yeah.
What you're going to get
out.
And
then you get onto our mailing list when we have information meetings and you learn the rest.
Beautiful.
So.
Love it. Megan, it's been 2 hours.
Are you kidding?
It's been two hours.
Oh, wow.
How easy did this flow?
Sorry.
This is perfect. And there's we still haven't
totally
touched
caffeinated.
I know. Oh, man, there's so much I didn't even get to.
Okay, next time we'll have to do it from the bar.
All right. Well, real quick.
Then it'll be like 4 hours.
What's worse to you? Blood, guts, poop, or pus?
Oh, lung butter. By far, lung butter.
Different colors.
I can deal with all kinds of stuff, but lung butter, ooh, really? Makes me gag.
It's just the ronchi when they cough and you go, hack that up, man.
And stomas. Get it. Stoma Damn. Plus lung butter equals resignation.
Projectile.
Yeah, vacation.
Yeah, you're out.
Yeah.
Megan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ken Allen awesome. Signing off.
Great.
Segment of the show, Jackson 5 ABC, buy it on iTunes, Kenneth Allen, Tromedy Podcast, signing off, saying, if you got it, baby, use it.